Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. We are so glad that you've tuned in today, and so will you be, because our guest is you. It's Ask the Guys, your questions, our answers, today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. This portion of the Real Estate Guys radio program is brought to you by International Coffee Farms, where you can own a parcel of land in your very own specialty coffee farm in Panama for as little as $15,000. Here's how it works. Deeded half-acre parcels entitled Specialty Coffee Farms in Boquete, Panama are turnkey managed professionally on your behalf by a team of local experts. Sustainable average income is estimated at 12%, and cash flow can begin within 12 to 15 months from the date of your parcel ownership. International Coffee Farms' mission is to own and operate specialty coffee farms that are economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable. As part of this mission, 20% of the gross profits of each farm is committed to a socially sustainable fund to improve the lives of the Panamanian coffee farm workers and their families. International Coffee Farms currently owns and operates 9 specialty coffee farms with half-acre parcels available for immediate ownership. To find out how you can become a coffee farm owner in Boquete, Panama, email coffee@realestateguysradio.com. That's coffee@realestateguysradio.com. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, financial strategist, co-host Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
We have had quite the whirlwind, flying all around, being in lots of places, interviewing lots of folks, being on the Investors Summit, and finally, we've settled back in to our routine a bit and have unlocked a treasure trove of Real Estate Guys questions.
Yeah, it's been great. We've thank you, everybody who's been out there sending your questions in. It really makes doing the show a lot easier when we actually know what you're interested in hearing about. We have a ton of really great questions. So we're really excited about doing the show today.
Yeah, in fact, so many. I think it might even carry over to next week, and we'll do two in a row. That's how many great questions have stacked up. Here's how it works. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, you go to our website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. Fire away. Some of the questions are just too specific, and we can't necessarily answer those on the show because they don't apply to anybody except you. So that's not a bad question. It's just one we don't usually answer. We normally don't answer questions personally, but every now and then, we might, or the Godfather might. But here's the basic disclaimers. We are not tax advisors. We are not attorneys. We don't give advice. We give ideas and information. So with that, here's question number one. This comes from Walter in Canada. Hey guys, I just started to look at real estate, but none of the numbers seem to make sense locally. What do I do? Well, I guess, Walter, you don't do anything. Ah, no. This, you know, for years I've said live where you want to live and invest where the numbers make sense. And frankly, Walter, there are a lot of places in the world and in Canada where the numbers don't make sense right now. They might in the future, and there might be buying opportunities and things can change in markets. But for the most part, live where you want to live, wherever that might be, that you want to be, that you have reason to be. And then invest where the numbers make sense. Now, as soon as we say that, which is easy to say, it means you have to start thinking about other markets, how far you want to be away, and who's going to do the work for you. If I bought the house next door and I rented it out, it'd be pretty easy for me to knock on the front door the first of the month and ask for the rent. And if they had a problem with their toilet, they could come knock on my door. I'm not recommending that, by the way. That's the exact opposite of what I would do. But the point is, you might be able to keep a good eye and a good watch on your property. And we certainly know people that have that kind of a heavy hand when it comes to management personally. On the other hand, if you bought a property halfway around the world, you would have no choice but to have somebody else take care of it, screen the tenants, schedule any of the work that has to be done, make any repairs or improvements to the property. You would have to build a team. So don't be discouraged that the numbers don't work in your area. Just take a bigger look.
Yeah, well, I mean, in any market where the numbers are tight, you spend a lot of time looking for deals. There's always the potential for a good deal in any market. So that's what we love about real estate. Every deal, every neighborhood, every ownership structure, every financing, it's all different. So it's always possible to find a deal. But in a tight market, you can spend a lot of time looking at deals and you come back with the conclusion, gee, I've looked at tons of properties. I can't find anything that makes sense. Well, if you took that same amount of time and effort and looked for markets that did make sense and built relationships with teams in those markets that made sense, where there's a higher probability that people will go out and be able to find deals for you. So instead of you looking for the deal, you look for the market, you build the team, and then you let them bring you the deals. It's a much better way to play. You still have to spend time and money on the front end, but instead of looking for the deals yourself, again, you're looking for the markets and you're building relationships with the team members.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many different ways to invest in real estate. Part of it depends on how actively you want to be in the whole process. Even if you're investing in a foreign market, it's another province over, it's another country, whatever that is, or it might be close to you, but you don't want to be the one doing all the work. Well, then you've got to build a team. We think of it like this. You start with you as an investor. What's your personal investment philosophy? How hands-on, how hands-off, what class of property, how close to where you live, all those things, the types of properties, the demographics you want to serve, all of that. Once you've figured that out, then you find a real estate market or markets or product type that can work for you. Then you find a team, and you got to get a great team to help. And then finally, you find a property. So that's kind of the way it should go. Most people start with the property, and that can end up in disaster if you didn't land in a good market or didn't get a great team. So as you're looking around, you say, well, gosh, the numbers aren't really working here. Well, there's a couple of ways to go. One is to start networking with folks in your area that are investing out of the area. See what they're doing. They may have gone through this very process that you're going through. Hey, my numbers aren't working here, but they're still investing in real estate. The next thing you do is to open up your horizon and say, based on my personal investment philosophy, the kinds of properties I'd be interested in, where are some of those properties and do those markets make sense? And then go check out a couple.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we have in our resource center, if you go to realestateguysradio.com, look under resources, you'll see Resource Network. We have a list of different marketplaces and different providers in those marketplaces. So it helps you a little bit from as terms of a shortcut. You've got people that you can talk with who you can go see, and they're in markets that have different performance characteristics, you know, but we've identified markets that we like, that we think where the numbers do make sense. And it's not just the numbers making sense. I mean, you can find marketplaces where numbers make sense, but they make sense for a reason. They make sense for a reason because nobody wants to own those properties. And so to find a market where it's a good solid market with good solid economic bones and all of the infrastructure and the things you look for, good solid prospects for long-term prosperity, and the numbers make sense. Those markets exist. Right now, largely in Canada, because Canada's been in the middle of a housing boom, those markets don't exist so much. So you got to take what the market gives you. If you go back and look at our experience, Robert, back in early 2000s, when California was just booming. I mean, there was equity everywhere, but the numbers didn't make sense. So eventually we moved out of the Silicon Valley area and got out into the Central Valley, Sacramento area. The numbers made sense. Pretty soon the numbers didn't make sense there either. And now we were off to Arizona and Nevada and different marketplaces looking for better numbers. Well, you're out there maybe, say, in the Midwest, and you look at Detroit. And again, I'm not going to pound on Detroit too hard, but the history was Detroit was a booming city, the richest city in the world. And then through whatever reason, and we could go down a whole rabbit trail on all the reasons why Detroit imploded. But at the end of the day, they were basically giving real estate away. And so you could say, oh, these numbers make sense, but they didn't make sense because they were giving it away for a reason. So you have to understand the market, whatever market you're going to invest in, does it make sense? And then does the deal make sense? And so it's, don't get those two reversed, because if you do, you can end up buying a property that looks like it makes sense on paper, but it's in a sinking ship market. And then it's really, really hard to get out of that.
Don't miss that point. It's critical. I often say it's never about the tenant who's in the property when you buy it. It's always about the tenant or line of tenants waiting to rent it if they leave because they're planning to. The numbers have to make sense from a market perspective, not just from a property perspective. And that's great, great stuff. So I think that's some good places to start. Walter, thanks for your great question. It's Ask the Guys today. This question comes from Ari in West Hollywood, California. He says, I have a question about using equity on an investment property. I've heard conflicting information. Is it prudent to use some of the equity that I have in my properties on an investment property as a down payment on the purchase of another property? Well, that is a great question for our financial strategist.
Yeah, this is my favorite thing in the world. It's what we call the free duplex story in our book, Equity Happens. We've been telling this story forever. The concept of equity optimization and equity repositioning. This is where you take equity out of a property through a cash out refinance, or you could do it through a 1031 tax deferred exchange if you want to relinquish the original property. But let's just use the idea that you'd like to keep the property. You still think it has good upside. The cash flow's improved, but you've got equity in it now. And at today's low interest rates, you can harvest that equity through a cash out refinance and then reposition it someplace else. So you can go from a mature market where the prices are high and the equity is built up, and you can move it into an emerging market where it's on the front end of its growth pattern. And there's definitely markets, as we just talked about in the previous question, that have different characteristics, different supply and demand dynamics that create those circumstances you're looking for where you can catch a rising market. So the short answer is yes. Here's where people get in trouble. It isn't the idea of moving equity, because equity is equity. If you've got equity in property A and all your equity is in property A, or if you split the equity into property A and B, it's still the same amount of equity. So what you're really doing is you're taking on additional debt and you're taking on additional income. And it's your ability to manage the additional income against the additional debt that makes it a good deal or a bad deal. It's not prudent to take a bunch of equity out on a property and put it into a really thinly capitalized or a property with very thin cash flow or negative cash flow if you don't have a real focused plan on how you're going to correct that problem, because that's a cancer and it will eat up your portfolio. So it isn't the act of moving equity from point A to point B that's imprudent. It's the financial structure on the deal that you took the equity from and the deal that you put the equity in. Both those deals have to make sense on their own merit. And if they do, then you're probably better off, because now you've diversified markets, you've acquired more top-line real estate, so even a modest level of appreciation will give you a greater equity growth rate, if you will, and I won't get into all the math on that, and you've acquired an additional tenant or additional group of tenants, which means you've diversified your income stream and you have more people to spread your income growth over. You know, you raise rent a little bit on a lot of people, that provides a bottom line dollar, absolute dollars every month coming in, that goes up by a certain amount is the same as taking one tenant and putting a huge increase. I mean, it just in terms of absolute dollars. So having more tenants, more properties is a diversification strategy that makes a ton of sense. You just have to make sure the underlying financial structure on each of the deals is prudent. That's where people get in trouble.
We say do the math, and the math will tell you what to do, so you can crunch some numbers on it. And you specifically asked Ari about taking equity from an investment property and putting it as a down payment for another investment property. And that is certainly prudent. Some people take equity from their home and put it towards an investment property. So the only caveat there is make sure you can live with that decision and consult the other people in your household, because your home is not an investment. I think Robert Kiyosaki has laid out all of the foundational work for that necessary for that argument, but your home is your home. And so while we are great believers in equity and in leverage, both using the equity to leverage and get that optimization that Russ was talking about, we also are probably a little less aggressive overall than we have been in the past based on, I don't know, all our friends on the Investor Summit at Sea saying we're sailing into some headwinds, plus the fact that you got to sleep at night. So it's where you are in your investment philosophy. But as Russ points out, repositioning isn't a bad idea. It depends on the deals.
Exactly.
It's Ask the Guys today, your questions and our answers. We've got a stack of great questions. Can't wait to get to more when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise. expertise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, this is Peter Schiff, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com. Every 8 to 10 weeks, we like to do Ask the Guys, your questions and our answers. If you have a question for The Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. This one comes from Jonathan in New York, New York.
Start spreading the news.
Hey, guys, we love listening to your podcast. Thank you. You know, just a hint. When you start your great Ask the Guys letter with how much you love us, there's a chance, a better chance it works its way to the top of the pile. So you're quite welcome.
In our sales training, we call that setting the table.
Setting the table. We're looking into purchasing our first rental unit in Maine. It's a 4-apartment style home. Should we create an LLC in order to purchase to protect our personal assets? The issue with this is that an LLC will require a 10-year mortgage as it will be a commercial loan. Thank you. All right, Jonathan, here's the deal. You're right. Sometimes your entity structure determines the kind of loan you get. Many people buy a property in their own name because they can qualify in their own name, and that makes a lot of sense. And then they decide to learn about asset protection and say, well, everything should be in an LLC. And then they discover that their LLC can't get a loan. So this is a very common quandary about what do you do for asset protection.
So it's also a common newbie question because you sound like a student, which is great, and you're out there looking to do the right thing, which is also great. You've already done some homework and understand some of the pitfalls, and now you've run into this brick wall where you've got to make a choice. And that's the way it always works out. You're going to have to make decisions. If you have a lot of assets that you're worried about protecting, then the added expense might be worth it to you. Now, with that said, you should look at the structure of how you're holding all of the other assets, not the subject property, but your other assets and how you want to protect those. It could be your personal residence and the equity there. There's a way we just talked about, a cash out refinance. You could pull it out. You don't have to put it in another property. You could park it in gold. You could park it in making other loans to other people. There's places to move the money around where it's more private. There's that. Then you've got your retirement accounts, which are largely, again, talk to lawyers, we're not lawyers, but retirement accounts are largely judgment-proof. You really don't have a lot of risk of anybody taking those from you. So that's a place you can park net worth, and you don't have as many asset protection concerns there. So the bigger question is the protection that you want to get worth it? So your first line of defense are going to be having great business practices so that people don't want to sue you. You haven't done anything wrong. Number two is you want to make sure you have tight legal agreements so that when there's misunderstandings, it's clear, because a lot of times lawsuits ensue from misunderstandings that good documentation will take care of. And especially if you build into those documentation things like arbitration, mandatory mediation clauses, and so you don't end up in a lawsuit, you agree to go somewhere and get settled. The other big thing is insurance. If you've got great insurance policies, for the average person, most of the things that are going to go on in your life in terms of managing risk are going to be covered by your insurance. So people who use entities do it for a lot of different reasons, and it's usually on bigger deals, bigger projects. Now, if you decide that you do want to do it, you're finding that, okay, if I do it in an LLC from the get-go, I'm going to go in and I'm going to have to use a commercial loan.
Well, it's not just the fact that it's a commercial loan, it's commercial terms. It may be harder to qualify for, and not all lenders will loan to an LLC. Plus, most people set up a single-purpose LLC to hold one property. It doesn't have any operating history to qualify for a loan.
Yeah, so you're going to end up with potentially a personal guarantee, and that's a whole different issue. So you have to weigh the pros and cons. What in the real world, and again, we're not telling you this is what you should do, but we can just tell you this is what we see happen all the time.
All the time.
People basically go out and they buy the property in their own name, they finance it in their own name, and then if they want to, they form a single-purpose LLC. same ownership structure, and then they transfer the property into the LLC so they get the LLC protection. You should check with your local property tax authority to make sure that that doesn't trigger a property tax reassessment or some other form of transfer tax.
And many times it won't, as long as the ownership is 100% the same and you state it is for tax planning and estate purposes, then normally you can make that transfer. It rarely costs very much. It's legal. Now, technically, there's likely a due on sale clause in your loan documents.
Also known as an acceleration clause.
Meaning that, oh, you just sold the property to somebody else. We made the loan to you. That somebody else is this entity. You say, no, it's not. It's me. It's just a legal. And I'll tell you what, in all the years we've been doing this, we've never seen a single person have that happen to them, where they've actually transferred it to an LLC, having done the homework first, and then had the loan accelerated.
The lender's interested in getting the payment. If you're making the payment on time and there's nothing about your insurance or your payments that make it look like you've done this transfer, then they're happy and nobody says anything. Now, again, we're not telling you to do that because technically your contract says that they could call the loan. It doesn't say they will. It just gives them the right to do it. So it's not like you're cheating them or doing something wrong. Now, there may be something in there where you're obligated to notify them. So again, you know, there's what the contract says and the way the technical legalities go, and we're not telling you to break the law or not honor your contract. We're just saying that what we've seen in the real world, this happens all the time. People just go, they get the property, they put it in their own name, they get the good loan, they transfer it into the LLC, they make the payments, they pay the property tax, they keep it insured, and nobody ever says anything and it's all good. When you get ready to refinance, then you're going to have to do a dance because you're going to have to move it back in and out again. This is common even with living trust. People do this with living trust. This isn't about asset protection because there's really not a lot of asset protection in a living trust. You're basically doing that to prevent probate costs and upon death. So it's more of an estate planning question. But a lender is going to look at that transfer. And so if you go to do a refinance, a lot of times you've got to move it out of your living trust into your own name, execute the refinance, and then at the end, deed it back to your living trust to put your estate planning structure back in place.
So hopefully we haven't overcomplicated the issue, but it's important, right? All these folks are out there preaching and teaching asset protection, and we're big proponents of it. But when the rubber meets the road, it's not always as easy to do as they make it look on late night TV. So just to check with your local authority, find out what other investors are doing, talk to a real estate attorney if you need to do it, but good stuff. So we've hit both coasts and we've hit Canada so far. This question comes from Adrian in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey guys, what are the dates for the 2018 Investor Summit at Sea, and when do tickets come out?
That's a great question.
Love that question. So our 16th annual Investor Summit at Sea in 2018 will be in April, early to mid-April. The dates will be out shortly. Here's how you get on the list. Go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click on the button that says Summit at Sea and get on the advanced notice list. We already have more than 130 people signed up for the summit. How did that happen? Well, they were on this year's summit, and the last day of the summit, we gave them an opportunity as alumni to sign up.
That ought to tell you something about how awesome it is. Here's the way it works. What happens is we open up registration for alumni first, and they get to eat their fill, but we will save a little bit.
And that's all that's been done so far.
That's all that's been done so far.
Nobody but alumni that have signed up. Those 130 people came from this year's 195 people. So there's just a percentage of how many on the spot said, I am coming back.
Then we have our Syndication Mentoring Club program, and everybody in there gets a chance to register, and they take up a chunk. Then we roll it out to our advance notice list.
That could be you.
That could be you if you're on the list.
Two ways now to do that. One way is to go to the website. The other way is to just send an email to summit2018, summit2018 at realestateguysradio.com, and instantly you're added to the list.
So in the 15th annual, the one that we just concluded in April of 2017, we ended up only needing to send two emails to our general list, and it sold out.
Right.
So you definitely, if you're serious and you really want to go, you really want to be on that advance notice list. And even then, we can't guarantee that there's going to be room. But what we will say is you'll know before it's open to the general public. So you'll have a chance. And when you get that, if you're serious, then you want to jump on it because it does sell out. It's going to sell out. This year was ridiculous, arguably our best ever. And that's, I think, why we got such a big uptake to come back again next year. So it's puts us a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of making enough room for new people, because we always want new people. But you know, at the same time, you know, we want to honor the opportunity for the people who have already come and supported the summit. So if you're an alumni out there, it's open season right now. You just have to contact us because it's not open on the website.
Right. So get on the advanced notice list, and we'd love to have you on the 16th Annual Investors Summit at Sea next year. It's Ask the Guys, your questions, our answers today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe, CEO of Paradigm Life. Wall Street and banks spend billions of dollars per year in advertising with the goal to convince you that they are the solution. But take a look around. None of their advice has worked. If you're listening to this, odds are pretty good that you're already a real estate investor, or at least becoming one. So why do you do it? Is it to hedge inflation, the tax benefits, or maybe it's to get your money away from Wall Street? It's because of these benefits and so many more that I created the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy. When you combine successful real estate investing with the Perpetual Wealth Strategy, you have the recipe for what has helped the wealthy to establish their financial well-being for decades. You can download the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy today by clicking the Resources tab on the Real Estate Guys Radio homepage. Don't wait, go download it now.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And if you're serious about learning how to invest in real estate, listen to the Real Estate Guys. They really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. It's Ask the Guys today. Your amazing questions and our attempt at answers. Speaking of questions, it is time to play real estate trivia. That's your chance to win a prize if you can answer a real estate trivia question that we have for you in just a minute. As soon as you hear the question and think you know the answer, fire off an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address. Because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of Rich Woman by Kim Kiyosaki, a great book. Whether you're a woman or a man, you need to read this book, and it could be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Our last show is Clues in the News, and we asked this: what is the widest river in the world? Yeah, years ago we asked what the longest river was. Well, it turns out the widest river in the world, according to the Guinness World Records, is the Amazon River in South America, which is also, of course, the longest river in the world. The width of the river is around 202 miles, where the Amazon opens into the Atlantic Ocean. That's pretty wide. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. The year 1773 marked the very first scheduled stagecoach route in the U.S. Where did it go? Yeah, the first scheduled service on a stagecoach went from one city to another city in the U.S. Which were those cities? That's a hard question, but it's a great prize. If you know the answer and you're the first to get it to us at trivia@realestateguysradio.com, you're going to get a copy of Rich Woman by Kim Kiyosaki. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's Ask the Guys, your questions and our answers. Great questions from our listeners. If you have one, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. This comes from Cheryl in Pacifica, California. She says, my spouse and I just paid off student loans and a vehicle loan. Essentially, we're free of debt. Well, good job. Our goal is to save $100,000 this year and buy rental property on the Big Island of Hawaii, where we eventually plan to live and to start establishing some cash flow. We also plan to take a year off and live off my spouse's retirement while visiting Southeast Asia, South America, and Africa. We are frugal and have simple needs. Would it be better to invest $100,000 with a syndicate for better monthly cash flow return? All right, this is actually a really great question for a lot of reasons, Cheryl. Obviously, your personal situation, but I think a lot of folks can relate to some things in here, which is why we chose it. Here's the deal. You could invest in a single property that is going to provide rent and cash flow that eventually you will retire in. Okay, that's a strategy. The second strategy is to invest with the syndicates. We'll talk about that secondly. But the first idea is this. The property that you want to retire in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whenever that is, may not be suited as a great investment property. Why would you think the same property could fulfill two very different needs? I remember we had a gentleman come to us in a particular market we do a field trip in, and he said, you know, I want to get a property that I can bring my kids every summer and vacation as they get older, and I want it big enough that they can bring their friends, and then we want it to provide cash flow for us for the next 5 or 10 years, and we see ourselves living here in 10 years. And I said, well, would you live in a big giant house when it's just the two of you? Well, we probably wouldn't need that, right? But you need that if you've got all these kids and all their friends coming. And then what makes you think that property is the best thing to rent in this market? Well, it's not. Pretty quickly, he came to the realization that one property cannot solve three different needs. So in this case, it might be that you find a great home you'd like to retire in, but it may not provide the same cash flow. So why not buy a cash flow property, let it cash flow, pick it based on its return and its ability to appreciate over time, based on it being in an amazing market like Hawaii, and then when it's time to retire, use that cash flow and equity to buy whatever you want to live in. So that's the first, just a paradigm break in thinking that that may not be the same property. Now, having said that, buying a property is a very active investment, even though you're going to likely use a property management team. It's different than passively investing in a real estate syndication.
Exactly. First of all, that's a great point, Robert, in terms of making sure that you are really focused on buying an investment vehicle that is going to take you to the destination you want to go. I love the idea of, hey, I'm going to buy a property that I eventually want to have and let someone else pay for it. The concept is the same. The good news is you don't have to identify that ultimate destination property today. All you've got to do is pick the best investment vehicle to grow whatever kind of wealth you're looking for. So if you buy a property primarily for its cash flow potential, then you will primarily have cash flow. Marketplaces that historically provide great cash flow haven't necessarily provided great equity growth, because equity growth, it grows out of supply and demand imbalance. And so at some point, the numbers just don't make sense. The person we were talking to from Canada earlier is in a marketplace where the equity growth has been amazing, but now the cash flow numbers don't make sense. So you couldn't really buy into that market. There are marketplaces that you can catch as they're transitioning. Dallas, Texas, for example, prior to the 2008 crisis, was really kind of a boring equity growth market in terms of it didn't grow. It just cash flowed. And then what happened is after the market crashed, it became one of the hot markets to buy in, to move in, because there were jobs, and it became more of an equity growth market, although the numbers still make sense, and it's still in that transition. It's like what happened to Southern California. Many years ago, Southern California, rents were low, and there were plenty of property, and things were still being built. But today, Southern California is very crowded. The incomes are very high. The property values are very high, and the rental values don't make as much sense. So it goes back to what we talked about at the top of this particular episode about picking markets that have certain characteristics. So if you're looking for long-term equity growth so that at some point you can cash that equity out, cash flow is about controlling the mortgages that allow you to control that property over time. And what you're looking for is supply-demand dynamics that lean more towards long-term price appreciation as opposed to just simply the highest cash flow yield. Now, if you decide that you want to invest for cash flow and you're going to live off the cash flow, that's a completely different discussion. You could even make the argument maybe even owning a cash flow property isn't the best way to do it. You may just want to be a lender and do hard money mortgages and get high yields without any threat of cash calls, always being in front of the equity so that if the market were to turn, you're always protected by a 30 or 40% buffer of equity in front of you. So that's a different discussion. Then when you come to the concept of a syndication, this is just really a hands-off investment, but the principle is the same. You're going to look at the underlying investment in the syndication and ask yourself, what is this thing designed to do? Is it designed that we get in and out and maybe it's a 3 to 5 year deal and they're going to buy in, they're going to build value somehow and then cash me out, and then I can continue to ratchet up that way? Is it a 20-year program where I'm just purchasing into a long-term stream of cash flow? Is it something shorter? You know, what's the risk? You have to ask yourself the same questions as if you were going to be the owner. What you really get out of it is you don't have to deal with it. You're basically hiring the syndication manager to run the project for you so you can traipse around the world and do what you want to do and not really have to think about it.
Well, in your case, that sounds like it might make sense because you've already said I'll be traveling for a year to different places. The last thing you need to do is land in Southeast Asia and get a call from your property manager that the water heater's gone out and what's the decision you need to make. When you invest in a syndication, you don't make any of those decisions. You don't deal with any of that stuff. That's what I like about investing passively in a syndication. Now, what do you have to do? You have to vet the deal and the sponsor. Who is it that's putting the deal together? What's their track record? You are now coming alongside somebody to invest in a business, in real estate, in an ongoing concern, and that's going to provide the cash flow you need and or the equity growth. Back to that, because you said you're going to live off your spouse's retirement. So if that's true, then you don't really need cash flow from this investment. Some syndications are cash flow investments. A group gets together and they raise a bunch of money and they buy an apartment building and it produces cash flow. Other syndications don't have any cash flow. They buy a piece of land, they develop it, and they sell it at a profit. You may not actually need the cash flow from the syndication, so that might open up the variety of opportunities you look at.
Yeah, but just to be clear, we're not saying that a property with a mortgage on it shouldn't cash flow.
Right.
We're not saying that. We're not saying cash flow is bad. What we're saying is that if your main purpose is to grow your net worth, you can do a forced equity type thing, which is could be a development project, a rehab, something like that. And there isn't any cash flow, at least in terms of monthly rent coming in. And hopefully there's a debt structure or no debt so that you don't have to worry about that. In terms of losing all your equity to a foreclosure or something like that. So, you know, you have to look at that underlying financial risk when there is no cash flow on a property if there's debt involved. So that's something you need to pay attention to. But the idea is that someone can take your money, pool it together with other people's money, buy a piece of land, buy a piece of property, do something to it to make it worth a lot more and get in and out of the deal in maybe 2 to 3 years. And maybe from a timing perspective, that works. And if you could get maybe a 15 or 20% annualized on something like that, and you know, a couple years later, you've done pretty well. And now you're back from your travels and you say, okay, now I want to go out there and I'm going to invest this myself and I'm going to put this into different types of properties. And you may change your strategy at that particular point in time. So just make sure that you line up your investment objectives and timing with the investment and the person who's managing it, and then make sure you understand the underlying risks, especially if it's an equity play and there's debt involved. That can be very risky because there's no assurance that on the back end of that deal that you're going to be liquid when you need to be liquid and there's going to be enough money to service that debt. And if you lose control of the debt, you lose 100% of the equity, and that's you. So you want to make sure that doesn't happen.
It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. More when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
If you want to retire in the next 5 years or less through real estate, then please pay close attention. My name is Brad Sumrock, and I've taught thousands of my students how to replace their incomes, quit their jobs, and retire faster than they ever thought possible by not investing in single-family homes. You see, there's a secret to retiring fast with little risk, and it has nothing to do with being a landlord, fixing toilets, or flipping houses. The secret is multifamily apartment buildings. Starting from scratch with zero experience, I managed to pocket over $1 million in cash and retire from my 17-year corporate job within 3 years of apartment investing. Now, this is not your typical no-money-down real estate training. We believe in smart, hard work for intelligent people. So if you're good with your finances, have a decent job, or saving your money, and you're looking for a change and getting out of the rat race, then investing in apartment buildings might just be the answer you've been looking for. Send an email right now to sumrock at realestateguysradio.com to get the details of my upcoming training event. And you'll also receive my free training webinar, Apartment Investing for Beginners. That's Sumrock, S-U-M-R-O-K, at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Mauricio Raul, founder and CEO of Premier Law Group, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. If you've ever wanted to make more money by doing bigger deals using other people's investment capital, then you need to come out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication in September in Dallas, Texas. All the information is on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. It's Ask the Guys. Every day we get questions submitted to our website, and we put a bunch of them in a pile and answer them when we can. We've got so many that we're going to extend the program in the next week. We'll come back in the studio next week, and we'll get to more of your questions. So if you have one for us, go to realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. This comes from Bobby in London in the UK. Dear sirs, you see how formal they are in London. Dear sirs, my name is Bobby, and I would like to know how to extend my property portfolio as I have run out of money after buying a couple of properties in the outskirts of London.
I've heard that happens, yeah. That you run out of money when you go on a shopping spree.
In London especially, prices are high. I do not want to go back to my very stressful and demanding job as a nurse. I know the UK is not your area of expertise, but any advice you have would be very appreciated. By the way, both of you are doing an amazing job, and I would love to meet you soon. Kind regards. Well, gosh, we would love to meet you too. And if you can't make it out here, we'd love to go to the UK. So just send us an invitation. So Bobby, great, great, great question, because here's what happens for a lot of folks. They get enamored of real estate. They get educated. They go out and they pull the trigger on something, and pretty quickly, they run out of their own capital and sometimes their own ability to qualify. So this is a very common thing that happens. So the first thing you have to do is analyze what you've done so far and practice what we would call zero-based thinking, knowing what you now know, because now you are a better investor than you were a little while ago before you had invested in anything. Say, knowing what I now know, would this be what I invested in? I look at properties I invested in early in my career and I go, what was I thinking? At the time, they were great deals, but today I have matured as an investor. So that's the first thing. Are the properties you're in worth staying in? If that's true, well, then you got to find out how to get to the well.
There's a couple different ways to handle this, depending on the properties and how they're performing. The best way to do this when you have limited resources to get going is you find properties that have a forced equity or value add potential. So you buy the property, you force the equity, raise the rents, and then you end up harvesting the equity and repositioning it, as we talked about earlier, into other properties. And so we call that breeding equity. And it works if you buy the right properties to start with.
And in the right markets.
In the right markets. And as long as there is available in the marketplace financing that would allow you to access that equity. Otherwise, what you have to do is you force the equity, you grow it, then you sell the property and incur your sales expenses and potentially taxes. I'm not sure what the laws are, but most countries have some type of a deferral of capital gains tax if you roll it into another investment. So in the United States, we call that a 1031 tax deferred exchange. So whether you do it through a cash out refinance or a 1031 tax deferred exchange, you go looking to move that equity into another property that's on the bottom end of the value chain, and you add value to it and create more equity. So this is a business of creating or forcing equity. And if you do that strategically, you can grow your equity starting with a modest investment. If you do it right, you can literally live off little slices of the equity that you take with each repositioning, and it becomes your job. Now, it is a job and it is stressful. So you might be jumping from the frying pan into the fire, and you have to consider that. That's one way to go. The other way to go, if you like doing that, or you decide that you want to buy what we call fat cows, properties that are already up and running, they've already been rehabbed, they're tenanted, and you're just going to operate them. Then the other way to do it is you go find people who have money, who have similar problems, but they have more money than you do, and you get rich helping rich people get richer. You go out there and you syndicate, and you find people that are doctors, lawyers, high-paid people. You come out of the nursing profession. You may know some of these people. They're busy, and they've got money. And you become their go-to person, and they place their money with you, and you form a syndication, and you go acquire these assets, and you manage these assets on their behalf, and then you take a little piece of that. And the bigger you grow that pie, your little piece gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So, you know, if you're getting, say, 5% on average from all sources of income on $100,000, you're making $5,000 a year. All right, that's not much. But if you have $1 million, now you're making $50,000 a year. If you have $10 million, now you're making $500,000 a year. So the short path in our world for someone who's got the skills and the hustle is to go out and build your brand, build your network, learn how to syndicate, leverage what you know how to do, and do it for other people who have more money than you do, and then you become rich, helping rich people get richer.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, syndication is not for everybody. Not everybody wants to be in the business of raising capital, but if you're interested in real estate, if you've got the bug, if you have some experience, it is a great way to leverage that. So that's certainly worth considering. But either way, just remember that financial pictures change, and you may have to sit out a little while, but keep your eye on the ball, keep looking at deals, keep your head in the game, and that way when an opportunity comes up, because sometimes there are low down opportunities that come up, there are don't wanters in real estate, just stay active and you will find some more real estate to put in your portfolio.
Well, that just brings up one little tag on comment. You know, you may be able to find ownerships where someone's got a property and they've got equity, they don't have the cash to fix it up, and you can partner with them. So you say, hey, look, if you will sell me this property and carry back your equity, and I will take a little bit of money that I have, or maybe we will harvest a little bit, use a little bit of credit, and go out there and you fix the property up, and they become your partner. And then when you sell it, they get more than they would have gotten, and you get something for having done the work. So there's a way to keep the party going. All of these things require work. You just have to decide what you want to do with your time. And that's really the big question, because you're starting another business. So if you found that your nursing career has been stressful and unpleasant, figure out why you don't like it, and then be really careful about thinking about what you will be doing and how you design your real estate investing business to make sure that you really will enjoy doing it. When you find work that you're good at, that you enjoy, that pays you well, and you get to work with people and in a subject matter that's interesting to you, even though you're working very hard like we do, it never feels like work. You're always just running around having a good time. And it, you know, we've been able, very fortunately, through the gift of real estate and you know, our love of teaching, to build a business and a lifestyle where we work all the time, but we never feel like we're working. And I hope you're able to figure that out for yourself as well.
All right. Great stuff, Bobby. Thanks for your question. This next question comes from Joel in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, guys, I'm putting deals together, working with investors, syndication, but I feel I might be offering too much percentage profit split on the investment. What's a good percentage to offer investors who provide the investment funds? I'm trying to find the sweet spot. Not too much, not too little. All right. Well, folks that do raise money have this exact issue to figure out. When you find a great deal, you can buy it with your own capital, and then you get all the profit. If I find a great deal and I have no money, I'm going to go raise capital and they're going to get a percentage of the profit. I'm going to keep a little myself. The hybrid is, and our favorite is, when you invest some of your own money, so you're eating your own cooking, and you raise the rest, what is a fair split? 32.98% is the magic. Here's the thing. There is no magic formula to this. It is a huge, gigantic, it depends. We have done deals where we have simply done 50-50 splits, and that has made sense for both us and the investors. We have done deals where we have done 95-5 splits. We have done deals where we have complicated waterfalls. We've done preferred returns. We've done it about every way you can do it. And the answer is, the best structure is one that attracts the right capital for you.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you have to look at is what's going on in the marketplace and what will the marketplace deliver. When you go out there and offer an investor a investment, you are competing with every other possible investment they could make. And they all have different risk rewards. They all have different personalities and interest benefits, and you have to figure that out. That's kind of the first part of it. And then once you have your deal and you know what you've got to work with, you have to have an idea what is the going rate for capital for the type of risk versus reward offering that you're making. And then you go out there and you start poking around. This is a dance. It is an art form. It is a negotiation. It's called price discovery. And you have to discover what the price is in the marketplace by making offers. If you're going out there with your offering and you're getting no takers, then you're too low or there's something else wrong. If you go out there and you have to offer so much that to get attract the capital that your deal can't support it, then you can't do the deal even if the capital says yes. And of course, you have to decide what you're willing to work for. So this is a complicated question, but in the real world, it's not that complicated. It starts with going out and looking for the best deal you can, and then going out and talking to people about opportunities and seeing what they would be interested in. Now, the best way to do this is before you have a deal. Because when you're having casual conversations with people saying, hey, Mr. Investor, Mr. Prospective Investor, here's what I do. I go out there and I find real estate deals that provide returns and I like to share those with people. If I were to come to you with the perfect deal that offered you a rate of return on an annualized basis, what would it take to get your interest? Would you be willing to invest for 2%? Would you be willing to invest for 4%? What number would make sense to you? And then they would say, oh, well, I'd invest for such and such. Okay, you say, that's great. Do you have any investments that are doing that right now? Oh, no. Okay, then you want to invest in Fantasyland.
Nice.
We had a guy come to us and said, look, here's our deal. I'm a cash buyer. I got money. You bring me a deal. I want 50% cash on cash. We said, okay, that's great. Good luck.
He's still waiting for
a return. He's still waiting. The deal didn't exist.
It's worse than that. Since then, we found several deals that perform better than that, and we don't call that guy. Right? I mean, that's just not how it works. So here's the reality. You're going to settle on a sweet spot of market and property type that fits a certain demographic. If I'm buying apartment buildings that are providing a 7% cap rate, and they're stable and they're in good markets, and I'm going to split that revenue with the folks putting up the money, I'm going to have to give the majority of the return to them because there's not enough slice in the pie, if you will. But if it's a big building, if it was a lot of money, I'm going to get paid my share. Even though it's a small percentage, it's going to be a healthy amount. On the other hand, if you're doing a lot of digging, if you're doing a ground-up construction deal, if you're doing all of the work, you might make half of the return because all they're doing is putting up the money. So it just completely depends on the deal. Here's what I would say. When you start out in syndication, err on the side of paying more to the investor. Err on the side of taking less yourself while you're learning, while you're building track record, while you're building what we call your experience resume. Give the lion's share to the investor because the purpose of doing the first few investments isn't to make a fortune, it's to build a business.
And emphasize predictability. You want to be consistent. You want to be dependable. You want to be money in the bank, if you will. You want to be a good bet. So if you do a high-risk deal right out of the gate and you're swinging for the fences, if I just do this one deal, I'll make enough money and I'll never need to use investors again. That could be great. But if you crash and burn, then that is your reputation. That is your track record. If you've got something already in your own portfolio, that can be great. You take something that's real, that you already know, that's performing well, and rather than go take a risk on something new, you just sell a piece of what you already have and know to a group of investors, and you give them a predictable result, build a track record, get a little working capital, and you go take the new venture risk with your own money and build a track record that way. So there's different ways to approach it, but the key is you have to get to know your demographic and what they're looking for and what it's going to take to attract them, and then put together deal structures that you honestly believe that you will get up every day and do the work for, because if you take money and don't do the work, then that's stealing.
All right, there's a bunch of great questions. We couldn't get to them all, which is why we're going to continue asking the guys next week. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. Hey, just got back from an amazing field trip to Belize. Big hello to all the great folks that we met lots of great listeners on the Belize field trip. We're doing it again in August. The dates and all the information available on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. You'll also see some of the places we'll be this summer. We're going to the Freedom Fest in July, and we're getting ready for the New Orleans Investment Conference next October. So come on out and see the Real Estate Guys, whether it's at one of our events or somebody else's. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.